Today, I am speaking with mezzo-soprano Renee McDonald, who attended Western Michigan University as an undergrad and went on to some pretty spectacular things. She's coming back for a homecoming recital at 2:30 this Sunday afternoon at First Congregational Church in the Sanctuary. She'll be joined by pianist Gunta Laukmana and saxophonist Jared Sellner. Renee, thanks for coming in today to talk about your program.
Thanks. It's great to be here. It's nice to always come home to a warm welcome.
You and I have chatted before on the radio. It was about 4 years ago we figured out.
Yeah.
Almost four.
Yeah, it was 2015.
Yeah.
August of 2015.
At that time, it was not a homecoming recital. It was a departure.
It was. It was. I went to Wichita State University. So at that time, I was looking into graduate schools, figuring out where I wanted to go. And so that fall, I left to go to Wichita State University to get my master's in opera performance, which, by the way, I'm a soprano. It's very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
I'm
okay.
Confused. I'm always confused.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Don't worry about it. It's a common thing that happens to me. And I got my master's. And then after I got my master's, I got my one-year performance and opera certificate from the same university. And then this past fall, I was hired on as an adjunct faculty member. So I'm actually teaching at the same university I graduated from. And it's been quite the ride of the last 3.5, 4 years.
What was fascinating to me and what I really remember vividly about our past conversation was when we talked about how you came to this point as a musician, there were some real struggles involved. Points at which you thought, I might not have the instrument, meaning your voice, to pursue this.
Yeah, it was rough. So for anybody who did not remember that first radio interview, I auditioned for schools of music for about 1.5 to 2 years to get into a bachelor's program, and then got in by the skin of my teeth to Western Michigan University as I was bumped up the wait list. And then, so that was quite the bit of a heart attack. And then by the time I had graduated, my education here had been so good that I had actually gotten into all of the 7 graduate schools I had auditioned for. And it's been pretty much nothing but up since then.
And what technically was the struggle at that time?
I have a larger instrument, and I had a lot of different teachers. I switched from teacher to teacher about roughly once a year for quite some time, with a couple stints of the same teacher for maybe 2. So I was resetting my technique really quite frequently, and my voice just didn't want to play nice with that. And so it wasn't great. And then we just spit polished that up a little bit, and we got there.
Who did you work with when you were here at Western?
So when I was here at Western, my first teacher was Professor Elizabeth Cowan. And then she temporarily got moved to work with the music theater majors. And then I worked with Professor Alice Pierce, who has since left to go work at a different university. And I worked with Dr. Ken Pruitt over the summers. And then I worked with Dr. Karen Kness during the school year. So just quite a few. And there was one time where I was working with the graduate teaching assistant for a semester before I was a major. So it's a lot.
That's a story of perseverance.
It's a lot for 5 years, you know?
So the happy news is you improved over those bachelor years at Western Michigan University, and probably naturally your voice grew into itself, as I understand that happens with operatic voices.
Yeah, they just they take some time. So the human body doesn't actually usually finish puberty, anybody's, until about your mid-ish 20s. And it's just more noticeable to singers because we tell the difference on a day-to-day basis as to whether where we feel in our development. And it's the difference between 20 and 24 is a very large difference. So between my start of my bachelor's program and my start of my master's program, how much of it was practice, how much of it was just growing into it, is both. So singers have this very interesting thing where they have to build their instrument while they're learning to use it. That it doesn't come out of its violin case ready to go. Like, you're building your instrument while you're using it, and it's just, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Well, if you're interested in hearing how this instrument turned out and is continuing to turn out, you can hear Renee McDonald in recital Sunday at 2:30 p.m. It's at First Congregational Church. Is this a ticketed concert?
Free for the public. Great. Free for everybody. Just show up.
You're calling it We're Back, a homecoming recital. It's so, you and who?
I'm the only one coming back. Both Gunta and Jared are staples of the Kalamazoo music scene. But it's called We're Back because it's a reference to a children's movie from 1993 called We're Back, A Dinosaur Story, which stars John Goodman and Jay Leno. And that was just a really fun movie for me. It's kind of not one of the most popular ones. I'm looking at it. It's got a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, it's not. But I loved that movie. It had dinosaurs in it. It had, like, weird magic in it. It had a circus. Like, I love that. I love that movie. And I just like to make jokes.
At certain ages, you don't get to pick what you love.
No.
You'll love anything that you see.
You put it in front of me. I like it. I like dinosaurs. It worked out.
We're Back, A Dinosaur Story.
A Soprano Story now.
Renee, that's fun. It's 2:30 on Sunday is your recital, and you are focusing on some music by American composers for the most part.
They are all American composers, and the oldest composition is from, I think it's 1958, I think is the oldest composition, and then everything else after that is much newer.
In the world of vocal music, that's extremely modern.
That's pretty modern, and I mean, two of the pieces are from 2017, so actually modern, not just in
half century modern.
Yeah, so it's great. I've got Samuel Barber and Giancarlo Monatti, who were life partners. I've started the recital with works by both of them, and that's actually kind of interesting. Monatti wrote the libretto to the opera for the first piece that I'm singing, and then I'm following up that piece with a Menotti song cycle. And so the Barber Vanessa was his first real big opera that made its name at the Metropolitan Opera and all of that. And I didn't realize this until a little bit after I had already programmed everything, because I just love Menotti. I fell in love with Menotti at Western Michigan University seminar when they had a guest come in and perform for all of the high schoolers, which at the time I was. And she performed this aria, which is now one of my staple arias. I sang it on my going away recital. I sang it on my senior recital. I used it at the Metropolitan Opera competition last year, where, in case anybody was curious, I won the district level last February. That was exciting. So Menotti and I, we have a history. So I wanted to do some Menotti, but I didn't want to do the same aria that I've sung in town a bunch of times. So I picked the song cycle because I love it, but it was written 2 years after Samuel Barber died. And then I looked at it, and I think it was written as Menotti's way to help process his mourning for his deceased partner.
Yeah, Menotti himself would have been up in age in 1983. And I see that's when these were published.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to the rest of the recital, I'm going to give us a break, and we'll listen to the aria from Vanessa, which, as you said, and I didn't even know, the lyrics are by Menotti,
mm-hmm.
music is by Samuel Barber, and this aria is called Do Not Utter a Word, and it actually does refer to a kind of homecoming.
It is. It's kind of... I didn't really realize when I was programming it. I programmed it because I just love that aria. But the aria is about Vanessa sings the aria, the titular character, and it's about she sees her lover coming home after having abandoned her for 20 years. It's not actually her lover. It's her lover's son that just looks a lot like him. And she's gone a little over the deep end. She's put blankets over all of the mirrors. She just keeps the windows closed. And so she sees who she thinks is her lover coming home. And so this is like her warning for him to come back. Like, don't come in here unless you still love me. So, I mean, yeah, it's a homecoming of sorts.
But the drama, oh my.
So much drama.
Do Not Utter a Word from Vanessa by Samuel Barber in a classic 1950s recording. Miss Staber is the soprano there. And I am with soprano Renee McDonald here at WMUK. Renata's concert is coming up Sunday. It's called We're Back, a homecoming recital. And you're kicking off the program with this aria by Samuel Barber, which, whoa, is this going to show your range?
It's a nice little lighthearted number.
It's intense. This is a great time to talk about opera because you kind of mentioned before the music that you did apply and proceeded quite far in the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions.
Yes, I auditioned in the Tulsa District last year, and much to my surprise, I actually won the district.
That's surprise! Fantastic, Renee.
I went to just go get the comments, try and just start dipping my toes outside of the university setting. Did not expect to win, just expected to just drive down, sing, get some good comments, go back home.
Doing it for the comments.
Yeah. Honestly, that's most of the reason you do competitions are so that the judges get to know who you are and so that you get the comments. Because if you do competitions to expect to win, you're probably going to just leave disappointed most of the time.
Most of the time.
So you do it for a lot of other reasons. And then if you win, it's the cherry on top. But I honestly did not expect to win at all. I was sitting there with my now fiance and they didn't call my name for any of the runner-ups. And I was like, well, okay, that's fine. Like, it means we'll get to go home. And then they called my name and it took me like a good, like, it felt like 5 minutes, but it was probably only like a half a second before like my eyes stopped glazing over and I was like, oh, whoops. I should probably walk up to the stage. I think I tripped like 3 times because I'm not a very naturally graceful person.
And you'll have to work on that if you're going to be on stage.
I really do. I mean, I can be graceful when like I'm focused on it, but I was caught so off guard. I think I tripped over the mic cord and caused the microphone to like frizz. Whoops.
Well, could you back up a little minute and tell me who is eligible for the National Council auditions? Is there an age limit?
There is an age limit. I don't remember the young side of the age limit off the top of my head, but the old side of the age limit is 30. So it's
30. So you have a ways to go.
Yes. And you can only audition 3 times. You can only do the competition 3 times, and the upper age limit is 30. So I won at 26, so I can do it 2 more times to try and get to the national level.
After district, is there something between district and national?
Yep, there's the district level, and then there's the regional level, and then there's the semifinals, and then the finals. And anybody who sings in the finals gets to sing with the orchestra at the Met.
At the Met.
Which is, you know, just everyone's dream. But even to just get through districts, even just to win the district level is still quite something, because there are a lot of very talented singers out there that apply every year. So even though I didn't get past regionals, I still got to sing at regionals. And so that was still, that was a really good experience.
Yeah. And you got to meet your peers and colleagues as well who are out there.
Yeah. I actually ran into a couple Western grads at the Tulsa District last year. Yeah. It was super interesting. I was like, hey, girl, what's up? She sounded good that day, too. So that works out.
Renee McDonald is a Western grad, and she performs a homecoming recital on Sunday at 2:30 at First Congregational Church in Kalamazoo. It's an exciting program of modern music by American composers. We just heard music of Samuel Barber. Let's have a look at the 5 songs you mentioned of Giancarlo Menotti, who was an American composer, but with an Italian connection.
Yeah, he was born
connection.
In Italy. He's Italian-American.
Yeah.
And he met Barber at Curtis. They both studied together, and then they became life partners, and they helped each other with their compositional projects and all of that fun jazz. And like I mentioned earlier, after looking at the timeline and after really looking at the text of the song cycle titled Five Songs, it's a very interesting title name.
Just simple.
It does look, I couldn't find any writing on it, but it would not surprise me if these five songs were written for Barber after he died 2 years prior to their publishing of Cancer. So
you can't help but to read into it a little bit.
You know, you don't necessarily need a scholarly article to show you, or at least give you an idea of what might have been going through the composer's head if you know their timeline. Yeah. Something that you learn at Western, they teach you to just read about your composers and the time period that they were writing and what was going on in their lives.
No, it's the context is wonderful. Let's remind listeners of some of Menotti's famous pieces. These probably are not well known, but he did write some really important operas. And
his most well-known opera is definitely A Mall and the Night Visitors. It's a Christmas opera. A lot of places do that every year. It's the story of the three kings passing through to get to Jesus. That's definitely the most popular one. My personal favorite is The Consul, which is the story of a woman and her child and her mother-in-law trying to leave a country.
A mysterious and not being a fascist country.
Yeah. It doesn't have a specific location. Some people say it's probably Russia. Some people say it's East Germany. It's specifically not mentioned as to which country it is because it's such an applicable story no matter where you are.
Yeah. Somewhere in the world.
Yeah. And that was written in the late 1940s, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. So, I mean, again, drawing your historical context clues about where that story was probably written from.
Yeah, you do see arias from The Consul on recital programs and aria CDs. You see A Mall and the Night Visitors every year somewhere. And these five songs, you've chosen three of the five. Would you tell me a little bit about number two, The Idle Gift?
The Idle Gift is, well, the text is, "Do not despise the rose, for its beauty is manifest." It seems like, the more I look at it, that Menotti wrote this one because he just is trying to not be bitter at Barber for some reason, and then Barber is gone by the end of the piece. So it's a little, when I was first looking at it, it read like a one-night stand, and then I looked at the historical context, and I was like, well, maybe it's a little bit more than that. It's not a happy song cycle. It's not super upbeat, but it's it's good. It's just so good.
Renee McDonald and Gunther Laugmann will be performing on Sunday, and this is one of the selections. It's called The Idle Gift by Giancarlo Menotti.
Its beauty is manifest. Do not decry the thistle for its elusive grace. I love what must be searched as well as readily offered. Nameless
music of Giancarlo Menotti. That's an evocative piece from his Five Songs, 1983, in performance on Sunday as Renee McDonald. And Renee's been talking about her career as of late, including winning the district finals of the Metropolitan National Council auditions. And I have my fingers crossed for you for the next couple of tries on that.
Yeah, you know, I won't be auditioning this year. The arias that I would want to present are not polished enough, and I don't want to try them out on the Monk stage. It's not a good place to just try something out. That's where you want to present things that are polished. So I'll probably give it another whirl probably next year, but
I'm interested in the process of polishing. I know that for a song, a recitalist or an opera singer, it's so much more than getting the notes right and the words right. It's almost like watching someone become a character on stage.
Yeah, it's, I mean, learning the notes and rhythms musically is the hard part for me. And then the fun part is getting into the character and really being able to express the music. Actually, my latest voice lesson was, hey, Renee, your technique is fine. You really need to just start singing it. Just go. And that's very hard for me to, because I, since I've had so many technical struggles, like the first place I go is, can I make sure that I can actually approach this note? Is this note going to come out right? But it, a technical performance does not necessarily make for a compelling one. Mm-hmm. So the polish is feeling free enough to just let it go and play with it, and until you can kind of mold it into something that you're okay with presenting. Preferably happy with and presenting, not even just okay with. But that doesn't necessarily take a set amount of time. It's just when you feel like it's ready. And considering that I'm still in the memorizing part of those arias, I just decided that maybe not do a rush job on the polish.
That's fascinating. And it also makes me think of how you're working with students now. The school, again, Wichita State?
Wichita State University in good old Wichita, Kansas.
I have a special fondness for Kansas, having some relatives there. And my own great-grandfather's name is on a music library at Wichita State, the Thurlow Lawrence Music Library.
Yes. Surprise.
Yeah. So funny. So you've had to kind of break down your own understanding of vocal development and kind of work in ways to share it with students.
Oh, and that's been so fun. Because I've had such technical struggles, I've had teachers tell me at least 10 to 30 different ways to do something. So whenever a student approaches me with a problem, I probably at least have one thing I can tell them about this thing they're struggling with. I'm working with a small little handful of music theater majors, and they're all just lovely. They're just lovely. They're super great. I had to learn how to belt so I could teach them how to do that, because it's not necessarily something that an opera singer is like, I'm going to learn how to belt. But versatility is also very important, because as much as I would love to sing opera for the rest of my life, modern audiences don't necessarily go to the operas as much. So being able to do different styles and being proficient in different styles will do nothing but help any singer of any kind.
Absolutely. And some music theater kind of approaches opera. You know, you've got your Sondheim. And
I mean, music theater grew out of the opera tradition. So there are some people that argue that music theater is the American response to opera, because that's what people go to. It grew out. So basically it started Golden Age, like Sondheim. Not necessarily Golden Age, but he still used more classical vocal-ish techniques. But things like Rodgers and Hammerstein, all of that, they grew out of the operatic tradition, Gilbert and Sullivan, and then it just kind of went from there. And so we went from Oklahoma to Rent to Wicked to Dear Evan Hansen. We just run the gamut. And there are still modern American operas being performed, but there is some truth in the idea that maybe the American musical is not exactly as far away from what an opera would be if that were the way that we had gone completely.
I could talk to you couple hours about vocal music and music history. My guest is Renee McDonald. If you just tuned in, she is an alumna of Western Michigan University, and she went on to get her master's at Wichita State University, where she now teaches, and her career is really picking up. I hope you are auditioning here and there for...
Oh, I'm auditioning all over the place for stuff. We're taking auditions. Waiting to hear back from a couple places. You know, it's hit or miss as to whether or not you're going to land something. And it's not necessarily because you didn't audition well. It could be because the place you auditioned for already kind of knew who they wanted. Somebody else was a better fit for some million different reasons. Somebody else was a better fit.
So true.
So long as you get the... my understanding is that so long as people are still calling me in to audition, I'm doing something right, even if I don't wind up getting the job.
What brought you back to Kalamazoo? Do you still have family or roots here?
Oh, yeah. My entire family is in Michigan, basically. My mom is here. My brothers are here. My aunts and uncles are here. I think I've got one cousin with his family in Texas, and pretty much everybody else is still in Michigan.
And you have now lived here and gone to school here and then gone away and worked elsewhere.
Graduated Loy Norix. Let's go.
Did that give you some perspective on the town that you're from?
Oh, yeah. Kalamazoo's great. Kalamazoo's absolutely wonderful. I love Wichita. Wichita has a very supportive music scene. I've had nothing but just support and care and love from Wichita. But going away and coming back, I continue to realize just how lucky everybody, like myself and everybody else in Kalamazoo, was to have what we have here. Because we might not be the largest city, but we sure are mighty when it comes to the arts. And that's just great. I realized after leaving for my master's that one of the reasons why I felt comfortable going into opera was that my high school choir teacher, Marie Kerstetter, and the director of the Kalamazoo Children's Chorus, which I was a part of from fifth grade to high school graduation, Fred Sang, both of them had worked with Meredith Arwady. I don't know if that's her last name anymore. I don't think it is. She got married.
Okay. That may be her stage name.
Yeah.
Still.
But she's a professional singing contralto. And she went to my high school and she sang in the Kalamazoo Children's Chorus. So when Fred Sang and Marie Kerstetter told me, they were like, hey, no, you this is a viable option. And I was just some dumb high schooler. I was like, no, that can't be true. But like looking at it, I was like, she's killing it out there. And she's from Kalamazoo too. So I don't see
Norix.
Why not. Yeah. Norix.
Yeah. Well, see, the path was partly laid. And that is necessary too, for you to actually envision.
Yes.
You know, what you could do.
Because if you can't envision it, you can't really do it. And sometimes imagination is lacking. So...
Well, it's a treat to have you back and have you perform back here in Kalamazoo. And again, the concert is Sunday at 2:30. It's free, open to the public, mm-hmm. and it's downtown at First Congregational Church. You brought together some wonderful musicians for this concert. Gunther Lauchmaner is just an absolute musical stalwart of Kalamazoo. Jared Selner is a saxophonist. I haven't figured out yet which set of pieces he's on.
He's playing on the Lori Laitman I Never Saw Another Butterfly.
Wonderful.
That song cycle is just for soprano and alto saxophone. There is no piano in that entire cycle.
How interesting. That's an amazing kind of orchestration.
It's wonderful. It's really quite beautiful. So when I was trying to program for this program, because I decided last summer, I was like, I should probably do a recital. I haven't sung in Kalamazoo in a real long time. And I was looking through my songbook of just like repertoire suggestions. And I wanted to do an all English recital because I mean, as much as I enjoy other languages, most people in Kalamazoo aren't necessarily fluent in French or German or Italian. So I figured, we'll just do an all-English recital. I love singing in English. It's honestly one of my favorite languages to sing in, which is also controversial because it's really hard to sing in because we have a lot of different vowels and consonants. But I was looking through my songbook and I was like, let's just look at the American composers. Let's just look at those. And I came across Lori Laitman. I was like, oh, a woman composer. That would be great. Like, that would be great to do something outside of the canon, kind of. Well, not really.
Because she's getting, she's really established.
She's pretty established at this point. And I was looking through it, and the book I was going through said for soprano and alto saxophone. And I was like, well, my best friend Jared plays the saxophone. I've known him since 2005, my freshman year of high school. He is the man that introduced me to my now fiancé. Like, we're close. And I was like, wow, I've actually never performed with Jared. I wonder if he'd be interested in doing the cycle with me. And he said yes. So that's how we programmed that. And then everything else just kind of... Basically, the things that I really wanted to do was that cycle, the Longview, which is the story of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not the whole cycle, but the one piece that I'm going to do. And I wanted to do the Menotti songs. And then everything else, I just kind of picked what I thought would fit.
Did you say Ruth Bader Ginsburg song? There's a song about Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
There's a 40-minute song cycle about Ruth Bader Ginsburg written by her daughter-in-law. And I'm doing one of the pieces on this recital. Surprise!
Is this a new
thing? It was composed in 2017 by Patrice Michaels. And so I'm doing the eighth movement of the 9-movement song cycle because as much as I want to do the whole thing, I, you know, wanted to do the saxophone piece. And so if the whole song cycle is 40 minutes, that is a whole recital.
That's a whole thing.
That's a whole recital. So I just went through and I picked one, and I picked the eighth movement because it's probably the movement that's the easiest to take out of context from the rest of the song cycle. The song cycle is not necessarily all of Justice Bader Ginsburg's own words. It's about major highlights in her life or major influences that she's had in her life. But the eighth movement is all of her most popular dissents set to music. So we've got the Hobby Lobby birth control. We've got the University of Michigan and the University of Texas, they're different cases about their affirmative action. We've got the Shelby County versus Holder on the Voting Rights Act of 1965 in there. You know, we've got some Ledbetter versus Goodyear, the pay gap case. So
what can you tell me about the composer Patrice Michaels besides the fact that she is Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law?
She's her daughter-in-law. She's also her own performer in her own right. So she's a singer. She's a vocalist. And she's written a couple things, but I'm not too terribly familiar with all of her work because I've been really just trying to figure out this
one piece.
this one 40-minute cycle was where I started. I haven't dug too terribly much into the rest of her stuff, but she has a whole website and everything of everything she's done, and it's
brand new piece.
It's brand new. 2017. It was composed in 2017.
So we haven't heard it before.
No, probably not. If somebody else has performed it in Kalamazoo, I would be surprised.
So you could see the movie and follow it up with a song recital.
Yeah, because that comes out this weekend.
I think it does.
I did not schedule that. That was not on purpose, ladies and gentlemen. It's just what happened.
Amazing synchronicity there. It's the large piece is called The Long View, a portrait of Ruth Bader Ginsburg in 9 songs. And you've selected number 8, Dissenter of...
De Universe. Dissenter. Yeah, Dissenter of De Universe. It's not The Universe, De Universe.
Dissenter of De Universe.
Yes, that's
5
that's
opinions
the title.
And a comment. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very intrigued by that, and we can't listen to it, obviously.
Because there are recordings of it, but probably not ones we can play on the radio.
Yeah. Nothing officially released at this point. Yeah. Renee McDonald will perform it on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. with pianist Gunter Lauchmann. And finally, we can move on to hear music from the Lori Laitman piece you mentioned.
Yes.
1995, the publishing date. It's called I Never Saw Another Butterfly. And she went out to write a whole series of songs, a song cycle for voice and saxophone.
Alto saxophone. And it's important to note that all of the text from this song cycle were written by children and teenagers who died in the Terezin concentration camp.
Wow.
Yep.
So this was a commemorative occasion, perhaps, trying to remember and honor the lives of that time. So, well, I didn't mean to sound so serious all of a sudden, but
you know,
this
I was looking
serious.
At it. I don't have a whole lot of really peppy numbers. I was looking at it. I was like, well, certainly a statement.
You yourself are a kind of a sunny disposition person. So are you actually drawn to this
I am.
Material?
I am drawn to this material. I like the happy peppy songs. There's kind of one near the end. It's a sarcastic, funny one. We'll get to that one later, but because I didn't want the whole recital to be a downer, but but I am. My sunny disposition is because I think really quite seriously about a lot of things, and I think the arts have been and always will be politicized. And whether or not you want them to be, they are. Whether or not anybody, like, whether or not you want an entertainer to be politicized, it doesn't matter if you want them to be or not. They are, just because they're in the public eye and they make a statement just by existing. So to deny that that's happening would be to deny some truths of life. I have a lot of thoughts. I haven't necessarily always been the most popular person. So music has been my way to get my thoughts across. Also because I'm not necessarily the most well-versed. I'm not very good at speaking necessarily.
Doing okay.
I fumble over my words a lot when I'm trying to express a lot of things. So it's been great for me to just find pieces that I'm like, yes, this, I agree with this. And it's been challenging to find English pieces that still keep a good melody, something that's still singable. It's still good, easy and refreshing to sing and listen to. Because in the early 1900s, there was this whole movement of just atonalism and weird serial, which I also love that. Wozzeck's one of my favorite operas. By Berg, not really particularly, you know, what we would call a bop, where you can just like, yeah, this is great, this is great.
No,
but so to find the English music that still kind of carries kind of a message that you can still have something to think on and meditate on, but still be an enjoyable musical experience, like an enjoyable journey, it's one of my favorite things to do.
It's been a while since I had an artist say I'm using music or using my art to express my inner, you know, core of sensibility. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure they all are, but you figured out that that's what you're doing.
I mean, you sing to express, not impress.
Well, let's hear some music from I Never Saw Another Butterfly. The very first song, would that work?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, it says text by Pavel Friedman. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned before, this was a young person who died in which concentration?
Terezin.
Music of Lori Leitman for voice and saxophone.
Yep.
That's music by the acclaimed songwriter Lori Leitman. And in that recording, we heard a soprano and clarinet setting of I Never Saw Another Butterfly. That's the name of the cycle. And mm-hmm. We heard the first song called The Butterfly. And if you just tuned in, my guest for the last few minutes of this hour is Renee McDonald. She is a soprano, and her recital is Sunday at 2:30 at First Congregational Church. And your longtime friend, Jared Selner, will be part of this piece.
On the saxophone as opposed to the clarinet.
It's originally for saxophone.
It's originally for saxophone, but especially as he's been telling me, the tessitura of the piece is still also very well suited for clarinet. So there are a lot of clarinet recordings of it as well.
You've known him since freshman year?
2005.
And you have yet to perform.
Yeah, we
together.
Haven't performed together outside of just like a small like little jam, like jam band. Like I would go to one of his blues jams at the 411 back in the DAY. Or we would just hang out because we both lived at the Mill House together, which is a house that has a strong music connection in the community. And we've never actually done a show together, ever.
This is
which
it.
Is just astounding to me. That's a lot of time to know somebody and be best friends and both be musicians, but not find a crossover. So I'm pretty excited to find a piece that we can do.
Well, there's 3 minutes left in this hour, and I just want to remind listeners that Renee McDonald is a Western grad who's gone on to earn her master's at Wichita State University, where she now is an adjunct professor of voice and continues to audition and make her way as a professional singer in this world. And it's our chance and our good luck to hear her on Sunday at 2:30 in a free concert at First Congregational Church, a program focused on songs by American composers, both women and men, both modern and mid-century. And I guess I would ask you for one last selection that we might finish with here.
I would say we'd probably want to finish with Lady of the Harbor by Lee Hoiby, which, also fun story, I learned that song when I was a sophomore in the music program here at Western, and I have continued to love it. Lee Hoiby died in 2011 when I was still a student here, and that hit me pretty hard because he is a student of Menotti, who we've discussed earlier in the program. Menotti is one of my favorites. Hoiby takes a lot of the same lyricism and approach to still having a singable melody with words that still sing well. And
what's the text here?
The text is the words that are written on the Statue of Liberty by Emma Lazarus.
Well, that's all of a piece with what you've been talking about this hour. Renee, it's been great to catch up once again. Please come back and ever more frequently so we can talk again and preview your music.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds great.
Have a wonderful recital on Sunday.
Thanks, Kara.